Hello, welcome to today's episode of Dear Jane. I'm your host, Marcy, and I'm joined by Scott.
Hello.
How's it going, Scott? We are excited for today's conversation. You're going to hear some really interesting stories today that I think is going to shock a lot of people who either don't think a lot about the abortion industry or it's just going to be eye-opening. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, this episode, it would be cool if we could get it into the hands or the ears of people who think of themselves as pro-choice or think of themselves as, that's just between a woman and her doctor. Those are the folks that really need to hear today's episode.
Yeah. Before we jump into today's episode, just a few little housekeeping items for you. Remember to subscribe wherever you're listening right now, whether that's Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube. Follow us on social media so you never miss an episode. And Scott, can you please tell us about today's sponsor, Choose Life Marketing?
Choose Life Marketing is the premier agency when it comes to reaching her, the abortion-minded woman. And the reason they can say that is the results that they get and the tactics that they use are unsurpassed by anyone. They're able to reach her where she is in a way that resonates with her, whether it's online or on the phone or, you know, whatever tactic is needed to make sure that she knows that she has options before her. And they do it in extremely innovative ways, creative ways. Their clients are many. And they've been very, very satisfied. Matter of fact, they'll have clients that might try something else and they'll come back and they'll say, oh boy, that was a mistake. We want to work with you guys. So they're really, really effective at what they do. So if your organization's goal is to reach her, the abortion-minded woman, where she is, you need to check them out. ChooseLifeMarketing.com.
Awesome. Thanks for that. All right. Today's guest is Missy Martinez Stone. She is a nationally recognized expert in holding abortion facilities accountable for unsafe and illegal practices. She has done work with clients that has led to the closure of a couple of abortion clinics. You're going to get to hear a lot more about her very important work and what her team is doing. She is the president and CEO at the Center for Client Safety. We're excited for you to hear more from her today. All right. Missy, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, so happy to be here.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the Center for Client Safety and why you started it?
Sure. So the Center for Client Safety investigates, reports, and shuts down abortion providers so that we can protect vulnerable women and children from harm. We were started about 5 years ago when pro-life movement leaders identified this really big gap, which we call the accountability gap, between the laws that are on the books, predominantly in states, we're working on a state level, and then what was actually being enforced on the abortion facilities. And I'm not talking about just pro-life laws or abortion restrictions, but just basic health and safety standards. And so states that were getting, you know, A-plus grades from pro-life policymakers, it's great in theory, but when you were talking to the local community members, they were saying, well, it doesn't matter because the local health department or the medical board is not enforcing those laws. And so the idea came up of how do we bridge that gap between what rules are on the books and who is holding them accountable and how can we ensure that process is happening. We started about 5 years ago and have just kind of exploded since then because this is a rampant problem everywhere where abortion facilities are not being required to meet the same standards as any other medical facility.
So what is the scope of the problem? How bad is it?
I mean, from what I have seen, you know, in the research that we have done, we have never investigated an abortion facility that I would consider safe. We've never found an abortion facility that was in full compliance. What the abortion industry wants to perpetuate is that these extreme cases like Kermit Gosnell or these dirty facilities are the exception. But what we have seen is it's the rule. I asked my director, my vice president of investigations the other day of, you know, if you had to bet, or maybe someone else asked us, I don't remember how it came up, but it was like, if you had to bet on all, you know, 700 abortion facilities, would we find one that was like actually in full compliance? And she was like, absolutely not. This is everywhere. This is in pro-life states and pro-abortion states, blue, red, it doesn't matter. These abortion facilities are not meeting basic health and safety standards, and they're putting women's lives at risk on top of killing children.
Why do the local health departments not enforce safety standards on these clinics?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it is genuine ignorance. Especially after Roe versus Wade was reversed, there were offices that just genuinely did not understand the changes in the legislation. And we've had cases where we've had to go to the agencies or to police departments and explain to them, you know, what the new laws were. And so some of it was just a breakdown in the bureaucracy. You know, the government's not exactly known for, like, communicating super well. And so there are a lot of cases where it is genuinely ignorance. But we have also dealt with hostility of these agencies not wanting to touch it because they're like, I don't want to deal with the abortion industry because they're known for just causing such chaos and backlash and fighting everything. It's like, please don't make me, you know, deal with that. Or they have their own personal bias that they don't think these abortion facilities should be the same, you know, meet those same standards. And so they don't do that. There is construction going on. Can you hear that?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, that's okay. Okay.
Sorry. They're building a library across the street from my office in...
That's that'll great be convenient. So what are some examples? Give us some examples of, I mean, we hear unsafe. What does that
mean? Right. What is unsafe? Actually? Right. That is the question. So typically what we're dealing with is just pretty classic medical negligence, patient privacy issues. Predominantly what we're hearing right now is, you know, women, especially with the pills, they're being distributed in ways that, you know, physicians are not doing exams ahead of time to screen them for risks, you know, screen for ectopic pregnancies, screen for gestational age to ensure that they're being distributed properly, which if they're not, leads to severe complications. Then we're seeing a lot of facilities refuse to do any kind of post-op exam. So they're going in having surgical procedures, and in every other field of medicine, if a doctor does any kind of procedure on you, you go back and they look at the site and make sure everything is okay. That's standard protocol. And these abortion facilities are refusing to do checkups, which again is leading to things like incomplete abortions or infections and other kind of complications, which is dangerous for the girls. And these are girls that are calling the facility being like, I think something's wrong. And they're like, you're not, one of them was told like, you're not our problem anymore. Like, go to the emergency room. And so, you know, they're putting another big thing we're hearing is like, they're putting multiple girls in a room at the same time and distributing the pill together, which to me is a huge patient privacy violation, and also just unethical to be treating a patient in that type of setting, especially that's something that is so such a hard decision, and a lot of these women are emotional and scared. Like, it's just unethical, but they want to get as many in and out, you know, as they can. And then you hear the classic, you know, dirty facilities, unlicensed people distributing controlled substances, which is a huge deal in the midst of the fentanyl crisis. You know, they're not locking their drugs away. They're letting people administer fentanyl that have no business doing so. You know, it basically anything you could think of, any regulation you could think of, they're probably breaking it.
That really highlights and exposes to me the myth when people say, oh, this should be a decision between a woman and her doctor.
Right. That's the first thing I said when I started hearing those stories from the pregnancy centers. I said, isn't that in direct contradiction to their huge talking point that this should be a private decision between a woman and her doctor? Then why are you putting 10 girls in a room? It really just comes down to if they want to get as many people in and out to make the most money, and that's the easiest way to do it. They do not care about these girls.
So they want us to believe it's healthcare, but they don't want to be treated like normal healthcare.
Exactly. For some reason, there's this misunderstanding or this misconception that if it's abortion related, that they don't have to comply with the basic standards of every other medical practice. And if you put any type of regulation on them, that is somehow preventing access to abortion, right? But all we are asking them to do is meet the same exact standards as everyone else in the medical field. But for some reason, I've never understood this, of why abortion advocates think that they should get a free pass. Because I'm like, if you want it legal, don't you want it to be safe? And if you can't, hold on one second. There's a wasp in the office. It just flew around. I'm sorry. I'm gonna start this over. I got stung this morning, so I'm like,
oh no.
Oh. Yeah, that would do it.
Yeah. All right. Just keep an eye out for it. Okay. How did I start? Oh, okay. I'll start from the beginning. There is this common issue that we run into that for some reason, if it involves abortion, it doesn't have to meet the basic safety standards that everybody else does it. Somehow they get an exception, even though it is a purely medical field. And I have never understood that argument, because if you want it to be legal, don't you want it to be safe? And if the people that are doing these abortions, if they can't meet basic health and safety standards, that's not our fault, right? Maybe that says something about the industry. Like, maybe you need to do some self-reflecting, abortion industry, of like why you can't find doctors who can meet these standards. And, you know, I say, like, you know, we don't actually shut them down. They shut themselves down. All we're doing is facilitating the conversation between what's happening on the ground and the appropriate agencies. But it's become so fever pitched and so hyper political that anytime we have tried to say, no, every medical practitioner has to follow these rules, it is interpreted by the abortion industry, who has a lot of money in marketing and can perpetuate these lies, that for some reason they get an exception to this. And all it does is create really dangerous situations for the women that they are supposedly serving.
Wow. So at what point does your organization enter the scene? Are you guys like out there examining all of the abortion clinics? Do you wait until women have been harmed? Kind of walk us through that side of things.
Well, the issue right now is so pervasive that we don't have to do any, like, we're not looking for cases. We're actually actively turning them away because we have too many. I need like 10 more investigators on my team to take on the full, because each case is very labor intensive. It's we have to research a ton. We're having to go back and forth with these agencies. I mean, it is a lot of work. So at this point, we're only taking cases as they come up. And we have official partnerships with Heartbeat International, Sialic Advocates for Life, and a couple of other big groups of, they are the ones on the outside seeing and hearing what's going on. The pregnancy centers are the ones that are talking to the clients and hearing the stories. And so we've set up like HIPAA compliant ways for them to report the information to us, and then we take it from there so that they can focus on being the best pregnancy centers. Like, I don't need them reading legal code, right? I need them in the room counseling these women. I need them on the sidewalk. So they are trained in how to identify the violations, how to report them appropriately and in a way that protects the woman from any kind of media exposure. Or, you know, we want to make sure that these women stay as safe and protected in this process. And so We train them and then on how to get information to us that we can actually do something with it, because they can see things or hear things, but if they don't document it correctly, if there's stuff that's like, if you want me to do something with this, it has to meet these standards, right? Because we're only taking cases to authorities if I know that it's solid. Like our complaints are very thoroughly researched. We're not taking anybody to court, but my standard is like, would this hold up in court? And so we're working typically on the defense right now of just like, once the violation has happened, once they are in the care of a SAWIC advocate or pregnancy center, that's when we get involved.
So you talked about how cumbersome or how much work is put into the investigation. Mm-hmm. What about, as you said, you finally, you know, you have a case, you feel good about it. I got to think, you know, dealing with the bureaucracy and jumping through all the hoops and all that, you talk about cumbersome. Tell us about how that has gone or how it goes.
Yeah. So when people ask me what I do, I'm like, I navigate bureaucracy for a living. That is what I have. That's a skill I have acquired. I've specialized in. And honestly, that takes the bulk of our time. It's chasing down bureaucrats and going, hi, reminder, please do your job. You know, hi, where are you on doing your job? Hi, you know, like, excuse me, if you do not do your job, we are going to appeal and go up the chain. And so a huge part of our job is looking at, okay, we have a violation, we've identified the code, and then we go, okay, what is the protocol? So then it's, what agency does it have to go to? Because every rule has its own department that it goes under, and they all have their own protocols. And so we have to figure out, okay, for this, so we have 50 states we're dealing with that all have like 100 agencies, right? And so a big part of our job is like figuring out their system. So, okay, this is a Board of Nursing complaint in Wisconsin, you know? So it's like, okay, Board of Nursing in Wisconsin, what is your protocol? And, you know, how do we submit those complaints and what do you need? And so it does take a lot of work, because once we submit those complaints, then we're going, okay, well, if they don't give us the answer we want, what's the next step here? And what's the next step here? And it's kind of like a flow chart, you know, like, okay, we're going to go this way. All right, well, they did this. Okay, now we got to go this way. But there's no way to create just like a one-size-fits-all template, because every violation is unique, which is going to go to its own board, which is in its own state, which has its own protocols, which has its own appeal processes. And so, yeah, it's a lot of navigating red tape and government bureaucracy. Yeah.
For an industry that... Yeah, for an industry that claims it's all about women's health care and cares about women.
They would want people to follow basic standards. It's wild. It's wild. And then in these agencies, their jobs are to hold bad practitioners accountable, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's literally your job. And so we hand them these bad practitioners and they're like, agency a couple years ago before our first closure, she tried to say like, this doesn't fall under our jurisdiction. Like, this is not a problem. And I literally found the code and like highlighted it in yellow and sent it back. And I said, yes, it is. Like, this is literally your job. So, it can be disheartening sometimes, but then when you get those big wins, it just makes it all worth it.
Are these agencies, I mean, it just makes me question, like, are they in cahoots with Planned Parenthood, with these abortion clinics? Like, what's the connection there?
I want to give people the benefit of the doubt. I really do. I want to go in assuming that it really is just ignorance. And in some cases, that is the case. And I think a mistake the pro-life movement has made is that they, when they're dealing with these kind of agencies, they go in immediately defensive. in believing that it's deep state or these people are in cahoots with Planned Parenthood. And it actually prevents a working relationship from being established because these people are like, whoa, you know, like, why are you coming at me like this? And so we approach every situation with information first. We're just going to assume that you're just not educated on this thing, and we're going to educate you, and then we're going to see where it goes. And we've had cases where that genuinely was the issue. They just didn't know or they didn't understand. But we have also had cases that have exposed some nefarious relationships, you know, and influences. And so it really, it depends, but then, when we discover that, we handle it, you know, as it needs to be handled. Like, some people may or may not have lost some jobs, you know, or, you know, some things were corrected behind the scenes. So we really just, again, take it case by case, but our initial interaction, we come in going, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. I want to work together. I want to solve this problem together. Like, let's figure out how we can do that. And we try to keep that position until they prove otherwise.
You know what interests, I mean, excuse me, what fascinates me the most, or well, one of the things that sticks out for what you've said, and I guess that I had a bit of a misunderstanding, is these originate from the women themselves. They're the ones that are seeing something to say, hey. So that, I mean, that to me, I'm just thinking through that. Nobody goes to an abortion clinic very much. And so you go and you're, I would think your expectations are low, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But then you even see something else like, whoa, that ain't right.
Yeah.
That really sticks out to me that they're the ones.
Yeah, they're going, that didn't seem right.
Yeah.
Or what we've trained the advocates to do is give them language, because you're dealing with women who are in trauma, in crisis. A lot of them are dealing with false shame that if they were treated poorly, that they somehow deserved it because they had an abortion. And so they don't know that their rights were violated. Some of them do. But some of them don't. And so when the pregnancy centers are counseling them and they hear something and they go, tell me more about that. Like, you know that was wrong, right? Like, you know that you, since you changed your mind, they should have listened, right? Like, that was a, like, so sometimes you have to give them that language. But yeah, all of our information is coming typically from the women themselves that are having these horrific experiences. I mean, we had one client that went to a pregnancy center, and she was one of the ones that reported being put in a room with 10 girls. And she left the facility just fuming mad because she was, you know, she was a college educated, like, businesswoman. And she had a basic understanding of patient rights. And she went, whoa, why am I being put in a room with 10 other girls? Like, one girl over here is crying. Like, this was, and so she marched over to the pregnancy center and was like, absolutely not. Like, she knew that that was wrong. But a lot of times we have to give them language. So we actually made cards. I wish I had one with me. We made postcards for the pregnancy center and the sidewalk advocates to give to them, that just give them language. So, like, tell us about your abortion experience. And it kind of lists some things, because then once they see it, they go, oh, thank you. This is what it looks like. It says, tell us about your abortion experience. And then we give them some language, because once they read it, they go, oh, you know, like, felt unsafe, the clinic was dirty, no, little to no tracking of your vitals during or after, no information about complications, no post-op. Like, once you plant that seed, they go, wait, maybe this wasn't right. You know, so we now have a whole website where they can just go straight to report themselves. And especially if it's coming from these clients, these women, these agencies need to take it seriously. Like, we're not submitting information that, like, Sharon's sister's cousin's neighbor heard through the grapevine, right? Like, this is coming from firsthand witness testimony, documentable situations of these girls.
Wow. It makes me think of another thing that we hear from the abortion industry. You know, it came out several years ago that Planned Parenthood was selling fetal body parts.
Yeah. Right.
And Planned Parenthood denies that. Other abortion clinics deny that. Have you guys encountered that at all?
We've looked a little bit into it. That is such a whole, we honestly don't have the capacity to, and that's like, if we've had cases where we have investigated where fetal remains were, there were questions about how they were being disposed of and where they were going. But we haven't even had the capacity really to dive into that because we're dealing with so many other more critical cases, you know, stuff that's like, they need to be shut down tomorrow or someone's going to die, you know? So we've had to almost like triage our caseload because we have so many coming in. And since that's a whole industry to unpack and, you know, it's, we just haven't had the capacity to do it. We did have one situation that we're still trying to get this physician in trouble for, but he was after an abortion. I'm sorry, it's going to get graphic for a minute. After an abortion, they are supposed to account for all of the pieces, right? And that's what you were seeing on the David Dalyden videos and stuff, is in that process, they have to show that everything was taken out. So to prove that the abortion was complete, so that, you know, you don't have a risk for infection or sepsis or complications. So that's what you were seeing. And so what was happening was they were basically putting in their medical records that all the parts were accounted for before the procedures were even being done. And it was their way of just like, it's just paperwork, whatever. But what was happening? A bunch of girls were ending up in the hospital with incomplete abortions because you were not doing that important piece. And that's like where, in those videos and stuff, like that's what's happening when they're talking about those body parts. And from that point they're sold. But the issue we're dealing with are these abortionists even making sure that all the body parts mm-hmm. were taken out, you know, so that you're not sending girls to the hospital with infections.
And that seems like trauma on a
trauma,
like,
on,
I get
trauma
that,
on trauma.
Well,
on
trauma. And I'm even thinking about the emergency room workers. Like, obviously they're trained in how to deal with trauma, but that's going to be a whole separate.
I had a conversation. I can't say too much about it because it's confidential, but I will say I had a medical practitioner call me and he said he's been in his field for 20 plus years and even he was like, I don't know how to recover from this. Like, I mean, we have talked to doctors. And there have been times too where even I'm reading about a case and I've had to take a minute and take a step back because they're grotesque. And the things that these women are experiencing are horrific. And then the staff at the hospitals, I mean, it's just truly grotesque. And you know, it's I think especially for the abortionist, it's almost like they've become so, they almost feel like demented. Like, I don't say that lightly, but a lot of the ones that we are investigating have some sort of criminal history, you know, drug charges. These are people, and even just in their day-to-day life and the way they carry themselves, I mean, it's dark. It's dark.
Yeah, I believe
it's really dark.
One of the reasons this is a timely conversation is because in multiple states around the country this year, and it's going to be happening in a lot of other states. We have these referendums coming up on state constitutional initiatives to basically allow unlimited, unrestricted abortion. And the other side is saying, well, it's health care, you know, support women's health care, vote for these things. And we're learning here that's not at all the case. And in a lot of these votes, basically, they're taking away any accountability whatsoever for these.
And people abortions. Don't realize that. And that's one of the big misunderstandings about these referendums and these amendments and things is I look at the enforcement piece, right? Like that is my area of expertise. And the issue is the way these rules are written, it does that exact thing. They remove all of the accountability. And I think the average person that's just hearing the abortion industry's marketing doesn't realize the full implications of what these initiatives do, what these ballot initiatives do. So this is just what happened in Ohio. People after Roe versus Wade was reversed, everybody got scared. Everyone's freaking out. The abortion industry jumped on that, seized that opportunity to spread all types of misinformation. And even in Kentucky, I mean, we had a constitutional amendment to make sure that abortion can never be interpreted in our constitution, and it lost in Kentucky because people were going, wait, we want to make sure women aren't going to die. We want to make sure. And the abortion industry just gets in their heads and says, if you do this, women are going to die. If you do this, women are going to die. And what they don't realize is the implications of these ballots are so far reaching that it's removing all form of accountability. And I don't think anybody wants that, but they don't understand legally what the ramifications are. So we're trying to get out there and be like, guys, like, this is what this means, right? So I had a conversation. One of our neighbors is just this beautiful kind of like hippie lady from the set. I mean, she's just wonderful, you know, but she's very liberal and, you know, she's just this precious garden lady. And she asked me what I do, and I was explaining to her, you know, I hold medical practitioners accountable for patient safety issues, especially for women. You know, I kind of give her the softball pitch. She's like, oh, that's really interesting. And I'm like, yeah, it's very prominent in the abortion industry because states have unregulated it. And she was like, what? And I was like Illinois, because she was from Chicago. I said, Illinois completely unregulated abortion facilities as a response to this, you know, to the pro-life wins. And they went the other direction and they don't have any regulations. And so I said, so we get a lot of cases from there of like issues. And she was like, they need to be regulated. They need to be inspected. And I was like, yes, they do. You know? And so I think the average person would go, duh, yeah. You know, if they understood that, but the way the abortion industry can like hide that stuff or just like sneak it in, people just don't realize what the true ramifications of these initiatives are. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
You would not do this with any other medical field. None.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think for decades they've peddled the same lies and people just believe it because it's like you say, you don't want to think the worst about someone or about an industry, especially an industry that says they care about women and women's rights and women's health. But then you start peeling back the layers and it doesn't seem like you have to go very far to realize that it's all. Yeah.
Well, I try to tell them, I'm like, people want to believe the best, right? But at the same time, the reason we have laws is to control for the worst, right? Like the reason that we have to say you cannot drink alcohol and drive a car, because all of us would go, yeah, but then there are people who drink alcohol and drive cars, right? It's like there's a reason we put laws on the books, and it's for this exact reason, because there are people out there that will do the bad thing, right? And so it's like so many of these medical boards, like, so the 10 women in a room at the same time is a perfect example. I told my family medicine, he's just a typical family medicine doctor, love him to death, he's amazing. He's not a pro-life activist, you know, all stuff. But he asked me what I did, and I was like, oh, you'll actually understand this on a different level. And I said, you know, we're dealing with, they put 10 girls in a room at the same time, and blah, blah. And he immediately was like, oh my gosh, like, come on. And I was like, yeah, the doctors don't want to believe that they have to say and also put patients in the rooms by themselves, right? Yeah. Because they just assume that's a given. That's a given. But who's not going to do that, right? It's these abortion facilities that are morally corrupt. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm like trying to explain to people is like, you have to control for the bad actors here. Now, they can argue all day that it's not everybody. I'm like, fine. If it's not everybody, you have to still at least control for the bad actors. Mm-hmm. Because you do have people that are taking advantage of an unregulated system and essentially hiding there because they can't practice medicine anywhere else because they have such a sordid history, right?
Yeah.
So it's just...
I don't know, Missy.
I'm on my soapbox now. Sorry.
It seems to me to be pretty gutsy to tell a doctor that, well, for a living, I hold doctors accountable. Did that really impact your care in the rest of that appointment?
No. He's a nice Christian guy. You know, he's supportive of what we do. I'm trying to remember anytime it's come up with any of my care, I'm like, I say I advocate for women who have bad medical experiences, and then just kind of like,
I hold people like you accountable.
Listen, I almost met the Kentucky abortionist because she was the OB attending at the practice that I was at. And when they said her name, I said, No, thank you. I do not want to meet her. And they were like, are you sure? I was like, no, I do not need to meet her. I don't. Well, I ended up having a terrible experience there. Shocker, right? And I reported my OB to, this was 6 years ago, I reported my OB to the medical board and she was investigated. So they should be scared. They should be.
Well, it sounds like your work is very needed and we need, at the very least, we need accountability within the abortion industry to protect women. If more people want to find out about your organization and maybe how they could be involved or just follow along with what you do, where can people find you?
Yeah. So we have a website, centerforclientsafety.org. Everything is there. You can read more about our mission and our strategy and our team. We're on socials at Center for Client Safety. We also have a podcast that goes out every other Friday that people have been really enjoying, where we focus on, it's called Centered. We're focusing on the fact that there are things about the abortion issue that everybody can get behind. Mm-hmm. And it's the basic health and safety standards. It's the, how can we reach across the aisles in this really polarized environment we're in right now and find ways to ensure women are not losing their lives because we can't find any kind of nuance and ways to work together. So we've got the Centered podcast. It's everywhere you can get your podcast. But the biggest thing right now is not enough people know who we are yet. And because we are such a new concept, because nobody's doing what we're doing, we've had exposure in the past, but that's just going to the media and it doesn't get the results that we get. And these cases are long. I mean, we have one case that's been going on for 4 years that we're on the brink of resolution for. Mm-hmm. But everyone that I talk to has your same reaction. Like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. Why haven't we been doing this before? This is so necessary. But it takes a conversation. It takes introducing someone to the concept entirely for them to get it. So it's a pretty heavy lift for us as a new organization. And so just helping spread the word about our work and what we're doing, like sharing this podcast with 3 to 4 friends, you know, is really what we need. And then, you know, obviously support. We all need support right now. And to be honest, like, I don't know if you guys are feeling this, but every nonprofit, especially in the pro-life movement I'm talking to, is feeling the pinch of it being a presidential election year, of the economy, people feeling uncertain about the economy. Giving across the board for everyone is just down. And we are all feeling that too, because giving is down. And so if you believe in a mission, if you want to support the pro-life cause, now is the time to do it. You know, we are busier than ever. We have more cases than ever that need to be pushed forward. So we need support more than ever. And we need people to sacrificially give if you want to see this go forward. So centerforclientsafety.org, you know, feel free to reach out to our team if you want to talk more, but we're just happy to keep getting the word out about this amazing strategy that gets results. I mean, we shut down 2 abortion facilities permanently. We've had 2 doctors. One was forced into retirement. One had his license suspended and was banned from doing abortions ever again. We've had multiple abortion facilities fined. We stopped 2 Planned Parenthoods from opening in upstate New York. Wow. You know, like, we can do this anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we want to keep pushing our cases forward.
Well, thank you so much for the work you do. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us today. We'll make sure people have the links to be able to find your website and social media. And yeah, good luck. Thanks for all that you're doing for women.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to Dear Jane.
You can follow along every day on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and X. And make sure you also are subscribed so you never miss an episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as YouTube. Ring that bell so you're notified and you never miss an episode.